Welcome to Plastic Model Mojo, a podcast dedicated to scale modeling, as well as the news and events around the hobby. Let's join Mike and Kentucky Dave as they strive to be informative, entertaining, and help you keep your modeling mojo alive.
Mojovia, and you too, Kentucky Dave. Welcome.
Yep.
Welcome to episode 99. This is the last double digit episode of Plastic Model Mojo ever.
Did you ever think?
I dreamt, but I didn't think.
Yeah, I hear you.
I remember when OTB did their 100, and I thought how cool that was. And then Stu and his gang at Scale Model Podcast had theirs, and I thought that was pretty cool. And we were the third to come along, and here we are, man. We are knocking at the door.
Yep. And the next one's going to be a great one, man. I cannot wait.
Well, other than that, Dave, and to give a little setup here, be sure when you go through your model sphere, you tell everybody about our show coming up. But what is up in your model sphere?
The MMCL show will get mentioned several times tonight. What's up in my model sphere is I'm anticipating the Military Modelers Club of Louisville holding the Region 4 regional show Friday the 22nd and Saturday the 23rd of September, which, by the way, assuming we drop this episode on time, should be pretty much the time you're listening to it. So if you're anywhere close to Louisville, Kentucky, there's a two-day model show going on. You want to be there. Now, my model sphere for the past week and a half has consisted of spending 4 days in Charleston, West Virginia. Now, I was born in Huntington, West Virginia, so I can diss my birth state, but 4 days in Charleston was a little long. My daughter wanted to go see the U.S. men's volleyball team, which we got to do and got to watch 3 days of multiple matches of teams from North America, Central America, and the Caribbean play volleyball. My younger daughter, who asks for almost nothing, wanted to see this, and it was important that she go see it, and we saw it. She enjoyed it. It wasn't bad to watch. I enjoy watching volleyball. Wasn't exactly modeling related, but I did.
I was about to say, how are you going to bring this back around to your model sphere, Dave?
Well, here's what I did do.
You got sick.
Well, that comes later. I did bring several books with me, because there are breaks in volleyball matches and all. So I got some significant model reading done. So that is one of those ways where you can get modeling adjacent stuff done when, you know, you're not going to be anywhere near your bench for some period of time. Now, as you mentioned, the downside was when we came back from Charleston, my youngest daughter came down with COVID, and I came down with the flu. In fact, my screen name tonight for our recording is Not Dead Yet, Kentucky Dave.
Well, that's good.
That's because I'm not dead yet. There were a couple of days where, I'm telling you, it was unpleasant. Now, all that adds up to be that I've been mostly away from my bench. I have gotten some stuff done, and we'll cover that in a benchtop halftime report. But I'm on the mend. I've got a model show this weekend. I'm going to get to see you in person and hand off some bourbon to you. And I'm going to get to see a bunch of modeling friends, so I'm looking forward to it. My model sphere's looking bright.
Well, you had a cross-podcast experience, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, that is true. Our friends down under, Digger Dave and the band from OTB, did their episode 172. And of course, 172 naturally leads to the thought of 72nd scale. So just in the midst of my flu, where I was barely coherent, I spent an hour with Tim Holland from the Model Geeks podcast, recording with Digger Dave and the boys from OTB, discussing all things 72nd scale. And that dropped last Saturday. If you haven't listened, go listen. Amazingly enough, even though I was flu-riddled at the time, I think it went pretty well. And anytime I get to visit with Dave and the boys, it's always a good time. Because how do you not have a good time doing that?
I don't know. They didn't ask me.
Yeah, I know. Well, don't. Please.
I'm teasing.
Okay. I'm teasing. So other than jealousy and hurt feelings, how is your model sphere going?
Well, you know, you lucked out on that OTB appearance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, Chris Sieber was busy with the host and the editor of Scale Aviation at his house. So Goldfinch had to go with you.
Yeah. Listen, I am fully willing to admit that that's the case. And even I would choose Chris Siebert over me.
I'm teasing, buddy. You know.
Yeah,
I am.
Yeah.
Well, I'm getting everything lined up to be in Louisville this Saturday, man. I'm really looking forward to it. It was a good time last year. Folks who are coming to the show who like books, I'm going to have the remnants of a book collection I picked up as part of my military wheeling and dealings a while back that I've been sitting on. It hadn't hatched yet, so I think I better get rid of it. I sold a few at one of the MMCLs a long time ago, and I've still got a bunch of books. It's going to be come make me an offer. And when I say make me an offer, you get yourself a deal, but don't offend me. There's a little latitude there. Yeah, I don't have a lot in these, so come see me. We'll talk.
Anytime there's a deal, that's a good time.
Other than that, man, I've been doing some behind the scenes work, trying to get ready for this episode 100 we got coming up, and making sure that goes off like we want it to, like it did last time with the call-in show.
Yeah, it ought to be even better this time.
It should be, and that's the fruits of that. Nobody will see except the. Well, they'll hear it eventually with episode 100, not a lot of tangibles there yet. But that's been going on, trying to make sure I've got everybody I want accounted for. And really looking forward to it, man.
Me too. I cannot wait. That'll be a great recording. So, Mike, since we're recording episode 99, this is your last double-digit modeling fluid. What is your last double-digit modeling fluid?
Well, I'm about Texas out.
yeah, I hear you.
So, and not to slide anything that was given to us, but I'm ready to come back to the home state, and I've gone back to my staple, my Russell's Reserve 10-year. No surprises on how that's going to end up, but that's what I got. Yeah. I will just say again, and you mentioned it already. I'll be bringing some bottles too. We need to trade and get the new experiences moving again.
Yep. Looking forward to it.
So, what do you got?
Well, I've got our special agent 004, Brandon Jacobs, was very kind. And not only did he, prior to San Marcos, help us scope out all the local things we needed to look for, but at the show, he brought us some modeling fluid, one of which is St. Arnold's Brewery out of Houston, Texas, their summer pills. And I'm opening this and drinking it in honor of Brandon because he and his better half completed the Pacific Coast Trail about 3 weeks ago or so.
I don't know if it's been that long, fairly recently.
And now keep in mind, he had done the Appalachian Trail and now he's done the Pacific Coast Trail. I suspect the number of people that have completed both of those in their entirety probably isn't a huge number of people.
I mean, yeah, it's probably pretty small.
So,
well, and amazing still is that they lit out and hit that like days after the National Convention was over.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. So kudos, man. Hell, we should have probably bought him beer.
Yeah, we should have. But in any event, he bought us beer, and it's St. Arnold's Brewery out of Houston, Texas. And as a good Catholic boy, I am ashamed I did not realize that St. Arnold is the patron saint of brewers. So, Brandon, I'm drinking this one in honor of you. Thank you for bringing it to us. And at the end of the episode, I'm going to be thrilled to report on how it is.
Well, all right, man. Now that we've greased the skids.
Yep.
Let's hit the mailbag.
Yeah, let's get into this thing.
I think we got a lot.
We do. It has been unbelievably busy.
Well, let me find my glasses. There they are. Okay. I'm almost as old as you, Dave.
Yeah. Okay. I'm used to Evan sticking that knife in. I'm not so used to you doing it.
Hey, we're both older than his dad, so it doesn't
matter. I know. That's sad.
Well, back to the mailbag. First up is Mr. Steve, ready for NordicCon Anderson from Matamida, Minnesota.
Okay.
And he's got a good one. I think you're going to like this one. Okay. I don't get to play on this one as much as you do. I've got some comments, but this one's more you, Dave. He wants to know what authors inspire our modeling.
Oh, you're right. For me, this one is pretty darn easy.
Now, he says for history in general, Edwin P. Hoyt.
A good choice.
Well, should he ever decide to build the escort carrier Gambier Bay and it's sinking at Leyte Gulf. More history with Hoyt, not so much modeling inspiration.
Yeah.
He does, though, mention a Barrett Tillman and his aircraft books.
Yeah.
And the exploits of the F4U Corsair in World War II in Korea, primarily in World War II, Marine skipper Hunter Reinberg had his mechanics build ice cream makers into the wings of his F4U. Because you can make a lot of ice cream at 30,000 feet.
30,000 feet. Yeah, I'll bet you can.
And make a quick descent so it doesn't melt.
Yeah. That's smart.
Under the guise of a high altitude engine and oxygen test.
Yep.
10 gallons of chocolate ice cream. And he's wanted to somehow work this into a diorama. But I tell you, that'd be an interesting one. It's kind of, you just have to scratch your heads on how to make that work.
But you know what? It would be a great twist on everybody has the classic one of the D-Day Spitfire, post-D-Day Spitfire with the barrels of beer under the wings. That they brought over they used to bring beer over for the troops.
And that's like a no-brainer. I mean, that's easy, right?
Right. In fact, you can get that kit with the beer barrels. That's been made. So this would be a great companion piece to it. A Corsair with ice cream makers in the wings. We need to talk to Chris Wallace. He needs to get on this right away. But to answer the question that this one is so easy for me, the answer pops immediately to my head, and that is Shores and Cull, who've done just a bunch of different books, either separately or together. And they are aviation historians, and they comb the records to do a day-by-day reciting of whatever campaign they're covering. And that's probably the authors that I own the most books authored by. And I find them both inspirational, and because they are meticulous aviation historians, they can tell you what pilot shot down what pilot on what day, and what aircraft both of them were flying. And generally, they're even supplying you with the serial numbers. It's just, I can't pick up a Shores and Cull book without being inspired. So if you don't have any of their books, and they cover everything from Korea and early Israeli War of Independence, all the way back through the major campaigns of World War II. Just fantastic stuff. The last one I think I completed was Diver, Diver, Diver which is a book on, it's the book on the V1 campaign against England. It's by Brian Cull and Bruce Lander. And it tells you all the V1 air-to-air kills. And surprisingly enough, if you read this book, you'll find that there was an air-to-air kill by a Lancaster, by a B-24, by a Grumman Avenger. I mean, just...
Those got to be like random flybys. They just happened to be there when it whizzed by.
Right. Well, with the Lancaster, that's exactly what happens, is that the aircraft are moving in one direction, the V1s are moving in the other, and a turret gunner happens to get off a shot to kill them. But that's the last one I think I finished. But there, anything by Shores or Cull is absolutely going to be a great read and an inspiration.
Well, he says, fun fact, I guess Tillman blasts Baba Black Sheep, saying the only thing good about it was the Corsairs.
Well,
I mean, the show was entertainment, but I got to say, as a kid, that sure inspired me to build a bunch of Corsairs.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
absolutely.
Absolutely. And listen, Pappy Boeington admitted many of the black sheep were not really happy. And Pappy Boeington, who in his non-flying life had many challenges, admitted that what he was doing for money. And so, you know, you can't begrudge the guy trying to make a living.
Boeington or Robert Conrad?
Boeington. Well, okay. Although that was kind of true of Robert Conrad, too.
He says Adam Marcos is a close second for him. He has a 72nd scale decal sets for the 109 and the B-17 in his book, A Higher Calling.
Yep.
And he bought a 35th scale Pershing based on reading Spearhead. I can get that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then his book, Devotion, makes him want to build a Korean era
Korea F4. Corsair. Yeah.
Yeah. Something he wouldn't have been excited about until he read the book. So what authors inspire you to purchase, build, or dioramas, et cetera? Well, you've already answered.
Yep.
For me, and I'm going to feel like a little bit of a fraud because I'm not the big reader you are, Dave. But
well, we've discussed this before. You're more inspired by old photographs.
That, and I'm more of a technical reader. So, you know, I could go through a list of technical history authors, which is, you know, like Tom Yentz and
right.
Spielberg and all those guys. And, you know, that's a different kind of thing.
Right. Not Steven Spielberg.
No, Walter Spielberg.
I know. I didn't want anyone to get confused.
Well, they could because he's a movie producer, not an author. But
yeah.
If I had to pick an author, and again, I feel like a fraud because it's because of the movies that resulted from the books, though they're pretty close to the books, would be Cornelius Ryan.
I'm right there.
Both Longest Day and A Bridge Too Far.
Too Far.
Yep. Movie Too Long.
A Movie Too Long. Listen, all war movies have their faults, and 70s war movies and 60s war movies particularly have their faults, but you can't help but sit down and enjoy watching The Longest Day.
Well, I think for The Longest Day, the main thing is the idiosyncrasies of the actors.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were so, well, even A Bridge Too Far, but they portrayed their characters a little better. I mean, like, John Wayne's going to be John Wayne no matter what character he's playing. Eddie Albert's going to be Eddie Albert no matter what character he's playing. And you just can't escape, you know, some of those things. But as far as, you know, the anecdotes from the film, it's not a bad movie historically.
No, it truly isn't. I mean,
especially the commando assault, the French. Yeah, that one's pretty accurate, but
yes.
You know, I don't read much as you, Dave, but those would be, he would be the author that has probably inspired me the most, just because, sad to say, the movies that spawned from the books were stuff I grew up with, and that's the kind of stuff I wanted to build. Probably got me into armor modeling.
Absolutely, and that's a good thing.
That is, well, it is for me. Man, we beat that one to death, brother.
That's okay. It's what we're here for.
Good question, Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one. So I'd be curious what the listeners out there have to say. What authors inspire you? Let us know. Tim Cavalier is back from Moscow, Idaho. They've got a show coming up.
Okay.
And we're going to plug it. Trying to negotiate their show flyer here and get the information I need. I hope I say this right. IPMS Palooza Area Modelers presents their 27th annual Show Off the Good Stuff Scale Model Show and Contest. It is held September 30th, 2023 at the 1912 Center at 412 East 3rd Street in Moscow, Idaho. So it's a pretty standard one-day show, looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in that area in a commutable distance, go check out their show at the 1912 Center in Moscow, Idaho.
Absolutely. Anytime we can promote a show.
Even our own.
That's right.
Our Gundam friend Jason Campbell's back again, and he wants to clear up the fact that he's not part of the Middle Tennessee IPMS. He's actually part of the Knoxville Club. Well, that's fine. You're part of a club. That's the important part.
That's right. That's right.
Now, he is attending the Middle Tennessee show in November. We don't have all the information for that yet, so we can't plug it. You should go to the IPMS website and check out the show calendar there and probably find out where it is.
We've been to it before, you and I.
Yes, we have.
Mike and I are laughing at the memory.
That's right. We'll leave that right there.
That's right.
Ask us in person.
That's right.
He's been attending the Clinton, Tennessee Model and Hobby Club in Clinton, Tennessee there. And I guess they're working with the staff at the Clinton Public Library. They're letting them meet there. Well, the club was started by a member of the Clinton Public Library, and they're letting them meet there and hang out. And interesting thing, the spouse of one of the attendees is red-green colorblind.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the staff members at the library overheard this conversation, and they're trying to get them on a list to – well, they got them on a list to try out some in-chroma glasses.
Oh, those things are cool. I've known some people who are red-green colorblind, and that is a really amazing – not cure, but – assistance for people who are red-green colorblind.
I'm curious what they do, actually, because I may be completely wrong because I'm not an ophthalmologist.
Right. But you play one on TV.
If you're red-green colorblind, don't your eyes lack the rods and or cones to receive those colors?
I do not know. And I would love to know more about it. But
that was my understanding. And if they did, I don't see how glasses could help you because you could never see those colors.
Right.
But I'm probably wrong because there's some in-chroma glasses that allegedly make this a lot easier, if not fix it entirely. I do not know. I'm ignorant on this topic again.
But it's a great thing where modeling leads to
yes.
something else great.
Well, he goes on and does another great thing.
Which is?
They got to help a young gentleman named George, age 7, which is about when I built my first kit with my dad.
You and me both.
Build his first model kit ever. The organizer had a few kits on hand for those who were curious but had never or had nothing to build. And this kid picked out a Bandai Pikachu Pokemon character kit. Hey,
that's awesome.
Open the door, man.
Exactly. That is awesome.
They got it, helped him get it together. And the library even put it in the display case that they've set aside for the model club. So, you know, when a library staff helps start the club, you get the display case, I guess.
Yeah, that's right.
And both he and his mother looked super excited. His mother was ecstatic that someone actually took the time to help her or help her son through this process.
Yeah. Well, and you know,
that's, I wonder if she's a single mom.
It may well be. Again, you and I had the luxury of fathers that would help us model, and not everybody has that. But listen, that's the thing. It doesn't have to be an armor model. It doesn't have to be an airplane. Whatever gets a kid inspired to put kits together.
Yeah, off the screen and something tactile.
Right. And not only that, but I think you would acknowledge, Mike, that modeling and following instructions and being able to look at a 2D set of instructions and a 3D set of parts and being able to visualize how those things go together,
Oh, yeah.
Really does have a positive benefit, particularly for kids whose brains are still growing and developing.
Well, it probably would help foster the whole DIY mindset around the house and
yes,
just all kinds of stuff like that. So
absolutely,
IKEA furniture. Well, Jason closes with some shots, which we can maybe put up on the dojo. Hey, you know, Jason, they're your pictures, and you've posted some already. If you've not posted these, please post these as well. That would be a lot easier on us.
Yeah, please post stuff to the dojo.
He's a Gundam guy, and he's built this Airfix Crusader. Not a bad kit.
Yeah.
It's probably not the Border Models Crusader at this point, but it's not a bad kit.
Yeah.
He's got it painted and decaled, so I guess the weathering's to follow suit here. Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
He's going to make me build my Airfix M3.
There you go.
Well, thanks, Jason. That's a lot of good stuff you got going on there. And hey, if you're in Knoxville, if you're a Knoxville guy, the Appalachian Scale Modelers are having their show in Greenville. I think it's in October. Please get a carload of guys from Knoxville and go support those guys, because they just chartered their club recently. I think that's right. And I went last year. I can't go this year because I can't pair it with a family visit back to my hometown. It wasn't a bad little show, and the only way's up. And I think they've got a great venue. And if Knoxville's, it's about a hour drive, maybe.
Yeah, that's an easy. That's almost an automatic for me.
Hour and a half. It's probably about 85 miles to this show location. Yeah. So, load up a bunch from Knoxville, get the word out, and go support those guys. They would sure appreciate it.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, the next two are from our longtime listener and supporter, Terry Wilkinson, and our good friend, John Vickas. I won't get into these because they're both topics for the Wheel of Accidental Wisdom for episode 100. So, guys, really appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
And there's some good stuff in there.
Yep. And John Vickas sent me a care package recently out of the blue. And I owe the man a thank you note. He's one really good guy.
Up next is from Down Under, Dave.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Ben Montgomery Schinkel from sunny Queensland, Australia.
Okay.
Ben's 33. He's new-ish to the hobby. You know, I think he's stretching that a little bit because he sent some pictures of his builds. He ain't that new to this. Well, since getting back into the hobby, he's completed 6 builds and started 18.
A man after my own heart.
That's right. He's colonized one, which is a word from the Model Geeks vernacular.
Yes.
Their friend Colin has a habit of throwing bad builds against the wall.
Yes. At our local club, MMCL, that's called El Stompo Bravo.
And he's got 47 in the stash, which we'll get to later.
Yes.
He's got some nice things to say about the podcast, and we really appreciate that. And we're helping him along, which is really flattering. There's a lot of these people who listen to the show are way better modelers than me.
Oh, God. God, yes. I'm not a modeler. I'm a kit assembler.
Nah, you're a modeler, but...
These guys, they're... I am in awe of a lot of the talent, of a lot of what's posted on the dojo. The level of work is pretty freaking amazing.
Well, he sent some pictures of his work, and he's recently attended the Australian Model Expo in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
The Queensland Model Hobby Expo, or QMHE, in Brisbane. And he's looking forward to Scale ACT, which in Canberra, which the OTB guys are harping about here of recent.
Mm-hmm.
Recently. And I think Lincoln Wright's going to be there, too.
Well, that ought to be an enjoyable.
That'll be a good show. He says he attended the Melbourne show with his friend Eric Galliers and Brett Simpson. They're both very talented modelers and stacked up a few awards. And the big thing that came out of this, though, was he says he was quote unquote bullied into a group build of Airfix 172nd scale REF V bombers.
Nice.
Ouch.
That's going to be big, man.
Well, yeah. Avro Vulcan, Hanley Page Victor, and the Vickers Valiant, which is a new one to me. I'm not familiar with that one.
Yep.
All the big Vs. And he sent pictures of the Victor. And yeah, that wasn't built by some guy who just got into modeling. It's a nice build. Deserved the gold it got. Nice build. Those are big kits. And
yes, they are.
I don't have any idea how good they are.
They're decent kits. I mean, they're not, given their size and complexity, they're not fall together. But they are modern. They're modern Airfix. So just the idea of doing a group build of V-bombers is just crazy. That's like doing a group build of B-52s. I mean,
yeah, that's nuts. Maybe worse, because there might be a better B-52 kit out there than any of these.
I don't know. They're not bad, especially, well, all three of them aren't bad. So, but I do like the fact that he got bullied into a group build, because that's what happens to me.
Yeah, it kind of happens that way.
Yes.
Well, for those listeners in Australia, he wants to shout out again, Eric Galliers of Manscale Models. Eric set up his hobby shop in Brisbane during the pandemic and has been very generous with his time and expertise as he's built up his collection and needed supplies, etc. And then for listeners in Brisbane, he would like to shout out the IPMS Queensland. Great bunch of guys to hang out with every third Wednesday of the month. He says there's a steady trickle of new blood over the past couple of years. It's been a great place to share mutual interests and learn from each other. So,
well, I think we can admit this, Mike. We've hung out with a fair number of Australians.
Yeah, we really have at this point, which is kind of miraculous.
And you know, they're, to a man, they're a great group of guys. I mean, they're just, you don't meet a bad Australian. I'm sure there are some out there, guys, but all of the Australian modelers we've hung out with have been just some of the greatest guys in the world to spend time with. And frankly, I'm looking forward to some more in Madison.
That's right. Hopefully a couple.
Exactly.
Well, his Victor's nice. I'll at least get those up. He sent us about 8 pictures. And yeah, you know, of the V-bombers, I think that one's my favorite.
I can understand that. I'm kind of a Vulcan guy, but that, I think that was probably James Bond and Thunderball that did that for me. But I can understand the Victor.
Ah, also from Down Under, Dave, from Tasmania.
Oh, wow. That's way down under.
Larkwhiskey country.
Yep.
Yeah, from last episode.
Uh-huh.
Adam Martin.
Okay.
And now, Adam's an architect and a canvas oil painter by his hobby. He's been going through our back catalog, and he's been inspired by Steve Husted.
Oh, well, yeah. No kidding. That does not shock me.
I may get this wrong, but because he sent some photographs of some, it's all diorama related. He sent some photos of some dioramas he's built. Well, yeah. Several pictures of a diorama he's built. He says, since listening to all that, you know, he's gone through tons of epoxy, plaster, and acrylic washes, et cetera. Just immersing himself in this media of diorama construction. And just the mindfulness of the art and all that. And where all this is coming from is he says a profound awareness of mental wellness. Now, I didn't elaborate too much on that, but he gets into a lot of how modeling and the escapism is an actual act of mindfulness, if you will, and it allows you to immerse yourself in a world of creativity and craftsmanship.
Yep.
And it's a small but valuable breather from the stresses of everyday life, which I agree with
wholeheartedly.
Which it's something to keep in check when modeling tries to steer you in other directions.
Yep.
It's a hobby, and that's
right. You're supposed to be having fun. If you're not having fun, you're doing it wrong.
And to add on to that, he wanted to highlight the potential of the model sphere as a powerful tool for promoting mental health.
Oh, I think that's true. In fact, I know that Jim Bates and John Vitkus on a couple of episodes of PPP have talked about the mental health aspects of modeling and the good it can do for folks looking for or needing that sort of relaxation or that distraction from all of the stuff that we have to deal with as adults in the modern world.
Adam says he's also been involved with creating and promoting various mental health platforms, and he's witnessed firsthand the impact of open, judgment-free dialogue on mental health and mental well-being. And he says podcasts like ours have had an incredible reach, and by sharing stories and experiences about how modeling has positively impacted mental wellness, you could help convey a vital message to your broader listenership. Well, I agree with that. And, you know, as you've already mentioned, Dave, Scott and his team at the Posse, and I think even OTB has maybe touched on this some.
And they've got so many episodes now, I don't remember, but yeah.
Well, and the guys at Just Making Conversation, Malcolm is involved with Models for Heroes. So
yes,
there's a lot of that in his work. So I understand this. And I tell you, if we've not addressed this overtly, but if Adam, if you're getting some of this vibe from our show, that this is helpful, I didn't really think about it that way.
But that's wonderful.
That's really wonderful. It really is. So Dave, I'm going to forward you this one so you can read it. And, Adam, we're probably going to be in touch with you about some of the other things you mentioned in this email. We're almost at the end of listener mail, Dave, from the email side of things.
Okay.
Incidentally, we missed Michael Karnauka in episode 98.
Yes, we did.
So I gave him the week off, and we're going to go with what he submitted last time.
Okay.
Sorry, Mike, but...
We appreciate you, Mike.
He's going to have a good one next episode because
I'm sure
he'll have had 2 weeks. Actually, we may go further. That may get pushed out into 101.
101.
Because 100 is going to be a freaking free for all.
Oh, yes, it is.
So what did Michael have in store for us for 98 that we missed? Let's see. Michael's question is whether you or I have a subject that we've modeled because it filled a necessary gap in our collection, or it was a paint scheme or a decal application for a finish that we were not particularly interested in from the beginning, but was important to a larger place in our collection, or perhaps a diorama.
The answer to that question is yes, at least for me. The one that pops to mind is I don't model a whole lot of Luftwaffe stuff. The German stuff I've modeled, I've done two ME-109s, neither of which are in German markings. One's Italian, one's Romanian. But I do have an interest in an engineering fascination with the German late war wonder weapon type things. And so I've modeled a V2, a V1, an A2. And one of the things I modeled was an ME-163. And I built the Academy kit, modeled it, decaled it, the classic ME-163 paint scheme. And it wasn't like I was particularly, again, I'm not a fan of German World War II schemes, so this wasn't something that called to me or anything. But I needed to do it because I needed it to fill that hole in that collection of items that were late World War II German desperation ideas or engineering advancements or whatever you want to call them. So the answer to that question is yes. How about you?
I can't say I've got anything like that because, you know, I've talked about it on the pod before. I've kind of got two modeling lives, right?
Right.
I've got pre-podcast Mike's modeling life with a big gap and then everything I've done since. But in that time frame, in armor modeling in particular, things have kind of shifted from modeling generic kind of schemes, generic markings, a vehicle of a unit, you know, you have a reference photo that shows vehicle number, say 104.
Right.
Well, you put your own spin on it and do 105, same unit or whatever, but it's not exactly, you're not bound by the historical photograph.
Right.
That's kind of the way things were mostly done in my first go at this. Mm-hmm. That's changed a lot. Now you see a lot of building specific vehicles.
Right.
You know, down to the nines, really, you know, the unique fittings, the unique stowage, whatever. And I'm a slow builder, and I don't have that many finished builds currently in my collection anyway. So I can't say that I've been inspired this way or needed to fill a gap. I tell you, though, based on the conversation with OTB, I bet Tim Hollins built a lot of schemes he'd rather have given the skip.
Yes, yes. And I suspect inch high, Jeff Groves has probably done the same thing because of his building of collections. If you do big enough collections, I'm sure that happens as a matter of course.
Well, that's it for the email side of things, Dave.
All right. Well, we've got a full Facebook Messenger side, and I'll try and go through them rapidly, but I don't want to give anything short shrift because there's some good stuff out here. Jared Strawn of Charleston, South Carolina, he DM'd talking about, you know, you have a bad day at work, you come home, you sit down at your bench to model, which is where you go to get away from your bad day at work, and you end up bringing the bad day at work home with you, and you start modeling, and you immediately start screwing up, having problems, which is the exact opposite of what we want this hobby to be.
Yeah, but I can empathize with this.
Oh, God, yes. God, yes. I mean, he and I had a long conversation. What do you do to avoid bringing the bad day home with you? A couple of the things that popped to my mind. One is that being aware of the fact that you've had a bad day of work and that you're coming to the bench to get away from it is one of the keys. Because, you know, if you just come and sit down at the bench and you've just brought that stuff with you without thinking about it, yeah, you're going to start making mistakes and screwing things up. And you don't want to do an El Stompo Bravo on the model that you're halfway through. One of the main things that I was talking about with him is that when I come home to the bench, there are things that I do not do unless I am completely relaxed and prepared. In other words, unless I've had a good day at work, like airbrushing or fine detail work, maybe even decaling, because that can kind of be stressful. But there are things that I find really bring out the zen of modeling, the relaxation of modeling. And for me, that's basic kit assembly stuff. That's clipping parts off sprues and sanding. Now, he's an aircraft modeler mostly like me. So, but what I suggested wasn't 100% applicable. But I know a lot of armor modelers. You want to sit down at the bench, you want to get rid of a bad day, you start putting track together, or you start sanding road wheels and running gear, because it's fairly mindless, it's hard to screw up, it's a lot of cleanup and detail, it's a lot of that, but you can just get into the groove of that. And if you get into a groove of doing whatever you're doing, the rough stuff falls away.
Yeah, this is a good one.
I agree.
I think you have to be mindful about, and you kind of said it, actually. You got to think about what you're about to do and where you're going, meaning going to the bench to work.
Right.
And if you do that, I think you can shed some of that negativity.
Yep.
And get yourself jazzed. You're going to go do something fun.
Yes.
It's hard sometimes. I get that. But yeah, sometimes you bring that crap to the bench and it's gonna amplify.
Oh yeah. Yep. And a lot of times you don't realize it. So,
and let's be honest, I mean, your bad day at work's a bad day at work.
Yeah.
Your bad day at the bench is you screwed up something that was really kind of something you liked a lot.
Right.
Maybe you like your job too, but yeah, I think you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. Mindfulness.
It's the vested interest part of it.
Yeah. No, I completely agree.
Good topic.
An equally good topic, John Colasante from Queens, New York.
Yep. He's on the Fusion 360 group chat I'm on Facebook.
Well, he went to a model show, and like a lot of us, you know, he loves pawing through the old aftermarket stuff and the, you know, the stuff in the box under the table for a dollar or whatever. We all do it. And he ended up finding and buying an old white metal Aero Club radial engine for, I forget what it was. He bought it for a dollar. But his point really was, and it's absolutely true, that this thing's worth zero. There is a 3D printed engine.
Yeah, his.
Yes. Okay. His 3D printed engine that is worlds better, which led to the discussion of there's all this aftermarket that in the 1980s and 1990s was cutting edge, but it has been so surpassed as to be basically useless. But yet, we'll still go to a model show and paw through a box and buy a piece for a dollar. And we'll also have it in our stash for 20 years. And we'll get into this later in more detail. We'll have it in our stash for 20 years, have it there, and we know it's been surpassed, but we don't get rid of it. We keep it in our stash, knowing for sure we are never going to utilize this item because we can go out and get the new item that is fantastic and use it.
Yes.
Why do we do these things?
Yeah, we'll get to that later.
I was going to say, that kind of part of what led toward what is our special segment for this episode. So I want to give John a shout out for that because it is a great area of discussion.
Well, I'll pile on a little bit. I've already told him in the Fusion 360 group chat, but real pleasure meeting you, and you're doing some amazing CAD design and some printing, and keep it up, man. And we'll see what you do next.
In 70 seconds, Gail. Charles Rice out of Barnwell, South Carolina, just reached out to remind us that IPMS Coastal Carolina has a show on October 14th in Charleston, South Carolina. That's the IPMS Coastal Carolina show, October 14th, Charleston, South Carolina. We're happy to give out shout outs for upcoming shows, so please reach out. John Havron from Fort Mitchell, Kentucky, reached out because he wanted to know, and you corrected me on this, because he wanted to know the episode that Ed Barrett was on and was talking about Yellow Wings on. And I gave him one episode, but I was mistaken because that was Ed's second appearance. And what he was looking for was Ed's first appearance, which is back on episode 45. And even though John's in Northern Kentucky, he's a father of young children, so he's not going to be down at the MMCL show on September 23rd or 22nd and 23rd in Louisville, Kentucky. So we told him that we would, in his absence, post plenty of photos and other stuff to the dojo, and we're probably going to be doing recording there. So, John, your absence is noted, but we'll know you're there in spirit. Next is Neil Gilborn out of Lincoln, United Kingdom. The Lincoln Scale Model Society annual show is October 15th, which, by the way, you know, that's a Sunday. I wonder if that is more common in the UK than it is here, where most shows are held on Saturdays. But in any event, the LSMC show for 2023 is on October 15th in Lincoln, UK. This next one, Mark DeRemus from Everett, Washington. And this kind of blew my mind, because 3-4 years ago, none of what I'm about to say would ever have absolutely occurred to me. Mark is out of Everett, Washington, but he works for a Japanese company, and he's in Hanoi in Vietnam, and he's hopping on the treadmill at his hotel in Hanoi and reaching back for old PMM episodes to listen to. And so he reaches out to me to tell me, hey, I'm in Hanoi, I'm on the treadmill, I looked back through Apple Podcasts or whatever, found the oldest PMM episode I could find, and I'm listening to it while I'm running on the treadmill in Hanoi. None of those words at all, ever. If I get a time machine and I go back 4 years and I find 4 years ago David and I say those words to him, none of those words are ever going to make a bit of sense to him. And it just goes to show how things have changed. The community has grown. All of this stuff has happened where one of our old podcasts is being listened to halfway around the world in Vietnam by a guy in his hotel getting his exercise.
Pretty amazing, man.
Yeah. And then we had a nice discussion about global supply chains and the merits of various countries in that part of the world for manufacturing. It just, again, it was awesome. It just blew my mind. Finally, again, Michael Karnaka. Michael reached out to me regarding something on the dojo that he brought my attention to that we needed to clean up, which brings me to mention to everybody who listens and who participates in the dojo, if any of you see stuff where a post or a comment is on there that shouldn't be or whatever, reach out to us, DM Mike or me, or email Mike or me, and we'll look into it. You know, we're on there. We've got Evan and Ian also moderating the dojo. But, you know, it helps to have as many eyes as possible. And Mike Karnaka did a nice little favor by reaching out and pointing out a post to me.
Well, and thanks to everybody for keeping it civil, because that makes it easy too. I mean, I've not posted any rules up there like some of the groups do. I mean, it's just kind of a gentleman's thing, right?
Right. Behave.
If you don't, well, maybe we'll have to do something. But I think this is mostly kind of spam related crap. But
yeah.
We appreciate that. It's easy when folks are being cool.
Yep, absolutely. We got a good community.
Well, if that's it from you, Dave, I want to give a plug again for episode 100. If you have questions you would like to submit to the Wheel of Accidental Wisdom, please do so. If you just want to interact with us with Dave and myself, just shoot us an email or a Facebook message. The email can go to plasticmodelmojo@gmail.com, and I'll take those primarily, and Dave gets the Facebook messages. So interact with the show. We appreciate it. We've had a bunch this last 2 weeks. So
it's going to be fun.
It's a lot of
fun. It was fun last time, and we learned a lot. This is going to be way fun. This is the point in the podcast where I ask you, if you have not done so, when you're done listening to this podcast, if you would go to whatever podcast app you use to listen to us and rate the podcast. We appreciate it if you give it 5 stars. I really am amazed at how important that is and how much it does drive visibility and new listeners. That's all thanks to you all. Also, as I've always said, the best thing you can do to get us a new listener is if you listen and you have a modeling friend, and we all have at least one modeling friend. If they're not listening to the podcast, please tell them about it. If they are technology challenged and need help getting a podcasting app downloaded so they can listen, please help them out with that. A personal recommendation is the best way to grow a podcast. We continue to grow, and it's all due to your all's efforts.
In addition to that, please check out the other podcasts out in the model sphere, and you can do that by going to www.modelpodcast.com. That's modelpodcastplural.com. It's a consortium website set up with the help of Stuart Clark from Scale Model Podcast up in Canada. If you go to scalemodelpodcast.com, you're going to find the banner links to all the other podcasts in the model sphere who have chosen to participate in the spirit of cross-promotion and support each other. It's a real good thing. We appreciate everybody's support. And this is a way you can go check out all those podcasts with one click. So www.modelpodcast.com and check those banner links out. In addition to the podcast, we got a lot of blog and YouTube friends out in the model sphere. We got Stephen Lee, Sprue Pie with Frets, looking for his next long or short form blog. Thinking he's going to have something to say about IPMS here soon, maybe.
Yep, he's tearing it up.
Jim Bates, Scale Canadian TV. Jim's on a trip up to Canada right now, checking out some museums, and I'm sure there's going to be some Scale Canadian TV come out of that.
Oh, there have been some videos already, and I'm sure there'll be more.
The Inch High Guy, All Things 72nd Scale, Jeff Groves, The Inch High Guy blog, All Things 72nd Scale. He's got a lot of great builds going on, a lot of collections he builds and gang builds, and we hope to see him soon.
He will be at the regional with us.
Chris Wallace, Model Airplane Maker. Chris has got a great blog and a YouTube channel. Check it out. Still moving into his new space. We look forward to that. But check out what Chris has got going on at the Model Airplane Maker. And finally, our friend Evan McCallum, Panzermeister 36. Got a lot of great videos out there for armor weathering, kit reviews.
He's got some new content coming down the pike, man.
So check it all out.
Finally, if you are not a member of IPMS USA, IPMS Canada, whatever IPMS national chapter is appropriate for you, please consider joining. Again, the IPMS national chapters do a lot to help the local chapters in their countries, in addition to international relations. And they are guys who are giving up a little bit of time to make the modeling experience and the club experience better. So please join the national organization. Additionally, please join AMPS if you are at all interested in armor modeling, the Armor Modeling and Preservation Society. Great group of guys. They are devoted to armor modeling and growing armor modeling. Their upcoming national in South Bend, Indiana in April of next year. It promises to be off the hook, and Mike and I are going to be there. So if you've got an interest, please consider joining AMPS as well.
All right, Dave, let's have a word from our sponsor.
Plastic Model Mojo is now brought to you by Model Paint Solutions, your source for Harder Steenbeck airbrushes, David Union power tools, and laboratory-grade mixing, measuring, and storage tools for use with all your model paints, be they acrylic, enamels, or lacquers. Check them out at www.modelpaintsolutions.com.
Well, Dave, it's the All-American Red, White, and Blue, the IPMS National Convention for 2024 in Madison, Wisconsin, man.
I am looking forward to it. I recently exchanged some DMs with Mr. Hearn, the show chairman, talking about the new venue and all of the benefits of the new venue. And in addition, talking to him about getting a representative on the show so that we can get regular updates. And not only that, but we can also help them promote the show and their trophy packages and vendor table sales and anything else. So there are a lot of guys dedicated to making Madison the best national ever. They have set their sights on making the show and we're back from COVID, where we're now fully post-COVID, and we're experiencing amazing growth at the national. And these guys really are dedicated to taking it to the next level.
At the time of this recording, Dave, we're 301 days away from this convention.
Well, I cannot wait. Looks like we're going to go up there in the company of friends, and we're going to have a great time.
Pre-registration opens March 1st of next year, so that's a ways off. But right. To pile onto your comment right there, if plans continue to hold, looks like I'm hauling a carload of Daves to Madison.
That's right.
Kentucky Dave is going to be there. A Digger Dave Goldfinch from On the Bench podcast is going to hopefully fly in and ride up with us. And then Dr. Dave Geldmacher from the Septembrist group is going to be going with us.
We're going to have more Daves than you can shake a stick at.
On the topic of Septembrist, so am I in or not? Is there some initiation stunt I've got to complete?
Well, at Madison, there may be something involving a blindfold and a paddle and a thank you, sir, may I have another? But we'll get into that.
You keep not inviting me to the Zoom meetings.
Well, I'm not in charge of that, but I'll I'll see what I can do. I'll get that cleared up. Of course, that last one, hell, I didn't make the Zoom meeting until late because I was doing the OTB interview.
Oh, well, you're all important and stuff.
There you go. That's right. It's all about me, baby.
Well, Dave, we've hinted and we've teased. Our special segment tonight is the stash. The urge to buy, the urge to sell. You know, tonight was supposed to be Steve Husted telling us all about clear parts and vacuum and all that jazz.
And then he had the temerity to run off to Europe and tour the battlefields of Europe.
He decided if a European vacation was more exciting. Yeah.
Geez, can you blame him?
Yeah, go figure, man. That guy. Well, we'll get caught up with Steve sometime after episode 100. Mm-hmm. When we can re-swizzle things. He's having a good time, and we're glad for that. So,
oh, yes. He's sending us great pictures to make us jealous.
Well, some of the other pods have tackled this one already, but we have not. And I hope we don't get a negative review for a topic duplication.
Oh, well. We can live with it.
We currently are.
Yeah.
So, Dave, the stash.
Tell people how this came about.
You have to help me. I don't think I remember.
Oh, I do. This is very memorable. You sent me a text where you said, you know, since we've been back from the Nationals, I haven't really bought much modeling related, and I'm starting to feel weird.
Okay.
And my response was, that's the way a junkie talks to his dealer.
Yeah, that's probably true. Well, let's just address the stash up front.
All right.
You know, how big is it, growing or shrinking, et cetera? My personal stash, where to even start? Damn. I probably had about 275 kits at high tide.
Yeah.
Which isn't terrible.
No.
All things considered.
Right. And then you said those famous words.
I did. I said that I can buy this crap on eBay anytime I want. So why have all this money tied up? So I, at a couple of MMCL shows and eBay and some other places, I sold down a bunch of my, I probably sold 100 kits mm-hmm. by the time it's all said and done. It's growing again. Not at the rate it was when I had the wholesale thing going on. When I was buying them five and six at a time, but,
yep.
Yeah, since January, 2020, when we launched Plastic Model Mojo, yeah, it's turned a net positive. yeah, quite a few.
Yep.
All kinds of crazy stuff, cross genre and everything.
So why?
Well, we'll get to the urge to buy in a minute, but
okay.
Let's talk a little bit about size yours up. Where do you stand at the moment?
My stash is probably topped out at about 1,000 kits. It is less than that now, not because I've been completing a whole bunch of models, but because I have at least begun the process of culling models to, you know, take ones that have been, that let's say a better kit comes along. Just to give you a perfect example, Tamiya comes out with their 72nd scale zero range. Those are the best kits I've ever built. I have a number of them, and I continue to acquire them, which we'll talk about down the road here. But what that means is I've gone into my stash, and I found all my zero kits from Hasegawa, which used to be what kit you built if you wanted to build a zero. And I will never build another one of those again. So I've started culling them, either giving them away to show raffles, selling them at tables at shows, giving them away to people getting into the hobby, because they're not awful kits. They're good kits. They've just been completely superseded. So my stash is shrinking, but it's not shrinking at a really great rate because I continue to buy new kits. This past Nationals in San Marcos was a perfect example. I came home with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 new kits that I bought.
That's the most I've ever seen you buy.
Yes, because now I've got what you might term a mature stash, in that I've got a lot of kits, so a lot of what I buy are books and aftermarket and decals. But a lot of new kits is usually not on my agenda. But again, we live in the greatest time, the golden age of modeling, and so many great new kits are coming out. Now, many of them are superseding kits in my stash. So these new kits I've acquired will mean that I will go through the stash at an appropriate time and I'll take out the superseded kits and do something with them.
Probably wise.
Yeah. Now, I just don't do it as quickly as I should, which is why the stash is growing again. And it shouldn't be.
It's a tough one, man.
Mm-hmm.
So we can talk a little bit about the logic or the lack of.
Lack of is probably better. But, you know, but it's part of the hobby, at least to me.
Well, I've got an outline here, but I think we're going to we're gonna veer into in and out of these areas of the outline.
You go. You give us the guided tour.
Well, you know, what do we get from it? You know, there's the ability to walk back there and pick your next thing and not have to wait on it.
Yep.
Not sure that's worth the investment, but
probably not. But there is a certain comfort to it.
I think a lot of it is the excitement of getting the new stuff and being part of those conversations and thumbing through the plastic. That's got to be a lot of it.
Oh, yeah. No, there is no doubt that. Okay, I don't get these weird people who buy new kits and leave them in the shrink wrap. Now, I'm not one of these people who feels the urge to buy a new kit and then immediately open it, start cutting parts, then put it back in the box and put it in the stash. That's weird to me. But if you're buying a kit, leaving it in the shrink wrap, that's unusual. Just because one of the joys of getting a new kit is opening it up, looking at the instructions, looking at the decals, looking at the parts, comparing the, you know, if it's a kit superseding a previous kit, you may get the old kit and compare the fidelity of the two. There is a joy not only in acquiring, which I think is, it's probably built into our monkey brain way back when, as part of a survival strategy, when what we were acquiring were things like food. But but there's a joy in acquiring, but there's also a joy in examining, in touching and feeling and looking. And then, and this is a big part of, or at least an important part of modeling, in my opinion, imagining.
Yeah, that's it. That's it for me.
When you look at that kit in the box, it's in the shrink, you know, it's out of the shrink wrap, but it's still in the bags and you're looking at it. I don't know about you, but for me, I'm sitting there thinking about, okay, this is what it's going to look like when it's done. This is the scheme I think I'd like to do. Yeah, these decals are good, or these decals don't look great, but I've got a set of decals in my decal collection that would go great with this kit, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's modeling. It's virtual modeling. It's modeling in your head, which is an important part of modeling, I think.
Well, I don't want to us to come across as advocates of creating a stash, because I don't think stash aside, in other aspects of life, I think we are both advocates of more sound money principles.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, again, right. You should not acquire a stash to the detriment of your financial situation. But by the same token, if you do have your fun money planned for and set aside, there is nothing wrong with using your fun money to build a stash if you get enjoyment out of it.
Yeah, I guess. I might buy that. I think more of where I was going was just to not say, hey, you need to go build a stash. Mm-mm. That itself is not a great idea.
No, especially to the detriment of your finances. Well, you should not build a stash to the detriment of your finances. But again, most people, you have whatever amount is your fun money, your hobby money, after you've been responsible and done all the good things that you're supposed to do. And I do think that there is some enjoyment out of that.
Now, there's a lot of enjoyment out of it.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's all in the urge to buy part of this is one, to be part of the current thing, right?
Right.
Be part of the conversation. The other is just a subject you're interested in. You're excited to get it, and you get the kit and you size it up, and you plan and dream and figure out all the things you want to do to it and what you might change, what you might accept as what's been given to you.
Right.
It's just fun. It's just part of it. Part of the hobby for a lot of people is the buying and accumulating.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know how wise it is, but or not. But it is fun.
And as long as you're responsible, it's harmless. I mean, it is nothing different than the guy who goes out and plays 18 holes on the weekend and spends the money that's required to do all of that. They got enjoyment out of it. They got relaxation out of it.
Then there's the urge to sell.
Yeah.
What do you think drives that one?
I think the urge to sell, ironically, is probably much more muted than it should be. Because I think once we've acquired something, we tend to want to hold on to it, even if the value of it has diminished because it has been replaced by something better. This goes back to what Mr. Colasante and I were talking about. You've got that old, I've got several drawers of aftermarket, and I have aftermarket items, white metal ejection seats, white metal engines, etc., that have clearly been superseded. And there is no logical reason for me to keep them because I will never utilize them.
Not many people buy them either.
And not many people buy them. So I should either give them away or, you know, sell them for scrap or throw them away. And God forbid, that's the hardest thing to do, to recognize that this thing that I purchased now has no effective value and I should get rid of it because it's just sitting there in my stash, cluttering up my life. And that's, you know, Marie Kondo talks about KonMari, you know, does it bring you joy and letting go of things and all of that stuff. I think that there's probably more hesitance to either, I don't want to say sell because it's bigger than that, divest your stash of things that it should be divested of. I think that's the much harder thing for the modeler to do.
Yeah, I agree. And where was it? I think it was one of the in our podcast group chat. We were talking about aftermarket, and I was talking about all the obsolete aftermarket I had in my stash. And somebody mentioned a scale modeling museum, and I made some comment about having the Jurassic period of aftermarket covered with my own donations or something like that. Something silly like that. But I've got stuff back there that's, oh my God.
Yeah. That you would never, even if you were working on a project that you could utilize it on, you would never utilize it because something better exists.
Well, what comes to mind is I've got aftermarket to better to me as original Panther kit.
And you're never going to build to me as original Panther kit ever.
No, not a chance. Yep. I mean, it was missing some of the road wheels. That kit's missing some road wheels.
By the way, just illustrates how far we've come.
Yeah, it's like I've had this stuff for 20 some years, and it's never going to get built.
Yeah,
it's a little limited value to anybody. Now, somebody out there might. Yeah, as some nostalgia build or some crazy upgrade magnum opus kind of project from some dog kit like the old Tamiya Panther.
Right. But those are rare. Oh. I mean, there's a rare individual that's going to do that. What you should do, and it's so hard to do, is you should take all that aftermarket, you should put it in that kit, and you should take it out to the trash and throw it away. But it's really hard to do.
I've thrown out a few.
I have too, but it's not.
Mostly kits, not aftermarket.
But it's hard to do. It's not easy to do because either you're sentimentally attached to it, you're emotionally attached to it, it's part of your stash, and there's some monkey brain part of us that doesn't ever want our stash to get smaller. Yep.
So back to the question of what do we get from it? I think you had it right. There's a lot of satisfaction in mulling through some of that stuff and formulating these plans. And I've talked about it on the pod before, you know, some of my big projects I've got going on or somewhere on my timeline to do.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that is piles of aftermarket associated with it. And, you formulate this build in your head. I've commented on the pod before that, you know, by the time I even start a project, I've already built it in my head.
Yes.
And that includes what aftermarket is going to be used, what bits and bobs from any given aftermarket are going to be utilized, and what kits I'm going to use, and all that stuff, man. And it's just the stash. I can go back there and dig through it and handle that stuff and get a good idea for what I want to do. But gosh, man, some of that stuff now when I go back there and dig is kind of sobering.
Yep. But again, when you do it, there's still part of that brain that gets tickled that you're like, I'm getting some joy out of this.
Some of it, I know that it's so far down the river that it's never going to get used. I'm like, man, I've spent a lot of money on this.
Yes. But you got some joy out of it. You spent money on joy, and that's not a bad thing. I think I probably told this story before. When my wife and I started dating, it's not like I introduced her to my modeling hobby right away, because frankly, I wanted her to continue to keep dating me. But at some point, I eventually introduced the hobby and showed her the stash, to which her response after looking at it was, what were you thinking? Which, yeah, typical response, and I completely understand it. But a point that I made to her, and I think is true, absolutely true, and goes to one of the things the stash brings us. I can go into my stash, put my hand on any model, and tell you when I bought it, exactly what I plan to do with it. What markings, what paint scheme, what decals, why I bought it. And that's part of that virtual modeling. In buying it, I was already building it in my head, or seeing it completed in my head,
yeah.
Even if the odds of actually seeing it completed were relatively low.
I struggle with that too, my friend. Anything else to talk about on stashes, Dave?
Okay. Stashes just aren't your kits, okay? Now, I have joked around here that my wife jokes that I'm a librarian who acquires models, and there's some truth to that. So my stash is not just the kits. It's not just the aftermarket. It's not just the decals. It's the books. It's the tools. I just bought after discussing with Dr. Geldmacher, this Vortex paint mixer. But I bought this Vortex paint mixer that after he showed me the one he had gotten and recommended it. Now, I had not only one perfectly good paint mixer of the shake type. I didn't have a Vortex mixer. I had two stick type paint mixers. Those were fine. They did the job. But this is an upgrade in technology that appears to do a better job than what I had. And so I upgraded. It's the reason I have 5 airbrushes. So a stash isn't just your kits. It is all of the modeling related stuff, up to and including a 3D printer, a wash station, a UV state, all of the stuff that some of us might be acquiring at this time to upgrade their brand new 3D printing stuff that is now a new and exciting part of their hobby.
Yeah, but the books and tools outlive the bad kits.
Yes, they're unlikely to be superseded. Yet, by the same token, the stick stirrers and the shape paint shaker have both been superseded by the Vortex mixer. So there is superseding going on. You've got a top-end printer. It is unlikely that for the next 10 years, you're going to get superseded in a point where you feel it and need to replace it. But it will eventually happen.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll be that long, but we'll see. I got to start using it more.
That's true. But but a stash is not specifically limited to your hobby. It's all of the thing. It's not the kits alone or the decals alone or the aftermarket alone. It's all of that stuff.
Anything else?
No, I think that's it. Other than I would urge listeners to go through your kits and go through your aftermarket. And if stuff has been superseded, get rid of it. I know it's hard to do, but find a way to get rid of it. I'm not saying you have to throw it away. I'm not saying you have to sell it, whatever you do. Because I do think there is a value in keeping the stash as up to date and trim as possible.
I think so. It's time for the Benchtop Halftime Report. You've been sick, man, so I don't know what you're going to have to say, but what's on your bench?
I've got a few things. One, I've got the F8, but I've been too sick to, well, I was out of town and then too sick to do anything meaningful on it, simply because reflecting back to what we were talking about, you don't want to you don't want to model when especially doing things that take real skill when you're not up to it, either from a bad day at work or you're still sick and shaky or whatever. So that's there, and it's just about to get back into the finishing of it. I do have a new project going, which frankly I had intended to put off until after the F8 was done. I am building the Trumpeter LCM-3 in 72nd scale. That's Landing Craft Mechanical. Was used at D-Day. This is for an upcoming group build of the Septemberists for our group display at the Nationals. The Trumpeter kit is far from perfect. It's not awful, but I found that I used to enjoy painting and finishing, and now I clearly enjoy building more. And so I'm in the building phase with this, and so I'm enjoying it a whole lot. And it's moving in a positive direction. And I'm getting enjoyment sitting at the bench, even in my flu-addled state, was able to make some progress with it. And then, as I mentioned, I picked up the paint mixer. So what I determined to do was take the paint shaker and one of my two stick stirrers, and I'm going to bring them to the MMCL show September 22nd and 23rd in Louisville, Kentucky. And I'm going to have them on our table, and I'm going to be looking to get rid of them cheap just to get them out. And there might be some other items from my aftermarket stash or my kit stash where I'm just trying to thin the stash, because I do think, while I don't think a stash is bad or necessarily bad, I do think trimming your stash down to its most its leanest form is probably still a good thing. So that's where my bench top is. Other than I also reached critical mass and have started to clean up, and I've also started to use an app called Paint Rack to try and catalog all the different paints that I have, so that I'll have a library on my phone of all the different paints that I've got, so that I can track them and know what I've got to work with, because right now I have no clue what I have to work with. So that's what my bench top looks like. How about yours?
Well, I've been busy, man. My wife was out of town over the extended weekend for a little birthday getaway with one of her friends. So I was touching on a lot of stuff.
The cat's away, the mouse will play, huh?
Yeah, but it's limited to modeling this time.
Well, that's good.
The E16 Paul, I started the pre-shading with the black.
Yep.
Trying to cut in the panel lines and some of the other panels. You know, it kind of looks like crap right now.
Well, it does. And that, I think frightens a lot of people from trying to do new things, is that especially with a lot of these techniques like pre-shading or whatever, when you initially do it, you look at it and you go, God, that looks awful. But it's part of a process.
Yeah, you got to keep going.
Right.
Well, on that, not so much going for painting between the lines accuracy.
Right.
Mostly making sure that my finish is smooth and clean.
Right.
Yeah, because I can go back with the white and lighter colors and cut all that in and knock the black down where it's too much and go from there. And then once that's done, I'm going to go back and pick out certain panels and shapes with the yellows and blues.
Right.
Under that. And then once all this pre-shading work is done, then I'm going to paint all the turtle deck colors and attach the canopy.
Yep.
And then once that's on, I can start thinking about painting the primary colors.
Looking forward to it.
Sounds like a plan. I don't know if it is one or not.
It is. That's the progression. And you go, and you know what? Don't let fear of, you know, you've got a great start to this point. Don't let the fear of the fact that it's going great so far keep you from completing it. That is a personal challenge that I have, and I struggle to overcome it every day.
Well, up next was the KV-85, and during an online build session, you had the unfortunate time of watching me literally stare at this model in base for like an hour.
It was interesting to see your mind at work.
So could you hear the wheels turning?
Yes. In fact, I could almost smell the smoke coming out of your ears.
Yes.
But you know, that is something that don't underrate that. Staring at a model and thinking about what steps you need to do to go forward, that's important, because the worst thing in the world is to do step, and then realize, oh, darn, I should have done this back here. And you've now made your life either impossible or 20 times harder, if you can still accomplish it at all.
Well, I think I've got an idea of what I want to do with that one going forward. A little negative modeling, though. In all the playing around on the base, I broke a swing arm off at the torsion bar, damn it. So,
yeah, I saw that.
That's unfortunate, but...
But it's not hard to correct.
I think once I get it, I'm going to add that one when I get the rest of it posed.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to fix the torsion bar and making it work again. That's just a bad plan.
Sure.
Got lots of projects, Dave. The other one is the Flak Panzer 38D, the Kugelblitz 3D print thing I've been working on.
Right. And this is more of a thing to play with the 3D printer.
Yeah, but I want to see this one through, though. I want to get this one painted and do as good a job as I think I can do on it.
Right. But you're not emotionally invested
in it. No, and I'm not going to replace a bunch of the shortcomings with kit parts from other sorts. I'm not going to do
right.
that.
You're not going to do a normal mic.
It's going
to
be it is what it is.
Right.
That said, I've got my empty resin replaced, and I've printed these small Pioneer tools and hull fittings and stuff. All look pretty good. Had a little alcohol rinse mishap. Some of these parts have a real small cross-section or a bad aspect ratio. They got a small cross-section, but they're really long in length. And I don't know how other 3D printers are. There's probably some guidelines out there, but for the Formlab stuff, for a given resin, you get a how long to rinse it in the alcohol bath, then how long to cure it for at what temperature. And normally that's pretty good. But when you start getting things that have really thin cross sections,
right,
particularly the alcohol rinse, yeah, all bets are off at that point. So a couple of these things, like, the kit has every part as a 3D print file, STL file, which includes the antenna mast, which
you're never going to use the 3D
which
printer
is
part.
A cat whisker, right?
Right.
And then the trough that when you retract it, it lays down in, which has the
right.
which is sheet metal, which has a thin cross section. I printed them all on a lark, really. I kind of knew that the antenna mast wasn't going to survive the entire process. It might print okay, but either during wash or cure, it was going to get all warped and not be usable. But the base, the antenna base, the mount where it attached to the hull, was going to be usable. So I printed it primarily for that. Now, the trough, the holding trough for the retracted antenna, a little different story. It's real thin cross-section. It printed really well, and it's just not going to survive the alcohol bath. So I'm going to have to roll that back. I'm going to reprint that one and either clean it by hand or really roll back the alcohol soak time and try to get a better part out of that. So I think I'll be successful. Stuff to keep in mind.
Well, you're learning. The whole point of doing this in the first place was learning.
Sure. Absolutely right.
Yeah. And as Steve Husted has pointed out to us, testing is 50% of what he does.
The Reba Botan project got a little love this week. I've been revisiting the tire. The tire is the real roadblock, which is interesting because I'm getting a lot of inspiration for this build on a Hungarian radio control forum.
Right.
Where a guy built a 1/16th scale Rabobotan that is freaking unbelievable. I mean, the engineering in it is incredible. It's like a consumer product almost.
Yeah.
But he was at the front end. It was at the same place I am, was that this vehicle has a very unique tire pattern. And if he couldn't get that right, he wasn't going to do the project.
Right.
So that's where the front end work is getting this tire right. So I had a go at it once before, and I got something that was okay, but not great. Had some issues I didn't like about it. And this week I've gone back through the model construction and how I'm going to resolve the issues that I had. And I think I've got a plan for that. So I think maybe this weekend after our show, when I get back home, I'm going to dive back into Fusion 360 and really take another bite at this tire. Hopefully get it this time, because I really want this project to move forward, but this is kind of the hang up. I don't want to invest the time in the rest of it if I can't get this part of it, because I think this is the hardest part.
Well, and you've got to be able to get it.
I think I can. Yeah, it's just I got to think it through.
Almost by definition, it should be able to be done. The question is investing the time and effort to do it.
Yeah, and there's a strategy. There's a sequence of steps to make it work out right.
Right.
Well, we'll see what happens, man. But that's a bit it for my bench top.
Post some pictures on the dojo.
I will.
So, Mike, we haven't revisited what's been coming out or announced lately out of the manufacturer's world. So, do you have some faves and yawns?
Man, I got all kinds. It's been an exciting couple of weeks.
I've got four. I've got three faves and one yawn, and I suspect at least one of ours may overlap. So, I'm going to let you go first.
Well, that probably won't overlap. My first fave is from Evolution Miniatures. They've got a new crop of World War II era Soviet figures.
Yep.
That look really, really good.
And you are hypercritical because of your interest in military and Soviet uniforms and helmets, etc. If you're looking at a figure and you're saying, wow, that's really good. That's really good.
Well, the good ones get into kind of the nuance of the way these clothes fit and the way they were actually worn, not so much the kind of textbook look. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. No, absolutely. And that's something that I think is probably not given enough attention to by many figure producers.
So I think the sculptors at Evolution, and I think Stalingrad Miniatures is another one, I think have an understanding of how some of this stuff was actually worn and what some of these troops actually looked like in the field versus the ideal situation.
Right.
Fully dressed out and fully kitted, properly worn by design, by protocol, by order or whatever configurations. More of the what the actual front soldier did with the stuff. So good looking figures. I'm would make a good Red Threads column. I'll have to talk to the author.
Yes, you should.
Well, what's your first one?
Is Zimmy Models 35th scale 40 millimeter Bofors mount from basically they're the twin mounts that you see on U.S. Navy ships. This is just cool. Now, for me personally, I'd like to see them shrink it down and do it in 72nd scale, but I can see the attraction of this 35th scale. It's going to look awesome. And it's just such a cool item. It'll go really well with the 35th scale 5-inch mount that's out there. It just, even not my scale, not my any, but just way cool.
Well, it's on my list too. And
I figured
it's a really cool offering. And what I think it complements even better than the one you mentioned is the fine molds triple 20 millimeter.
Yes.
Because those are the two like fleet mounted air defense systems.
Yes.
The 40 millimeter quad on the US ships. And then, and this, the fine molds, the triple 20 was, you know, the Japanese ships were just festooned with these things.
Triple 25.
Triple, is it 25? Yeah, maybe you're right.
Yeah, 25.
I can't remember, but yeah, really cool. I'm unless it absolutely sucks, I'm probably going to get this one.
Oh, yeah. And I've never heard of Zimmy models. I have no idea who they are, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, no, I can't wait to see this one.
Press also says they're picking up the former offerings from Kitty Hawk.
Yep.
So they've got a slate. The first slate they intend to put back on the market is most of the helicopters,
mm-hmm. which are some of the most in demand stuff that Kitty Hawk did.
Yeah, but you got to wonder, is this a good or bad given the Kitty Hawk reputation? I mean, this could go either way.
I don't know. You know, who knows? I'm just happy to see it. We'll see how it turns out.
Well, my next one's a yawn.
Okay, I've got a yawn too next.
Well,
so you go ahead.
Italeri has reboxed their Cimavente L40, which is the little short self-propelled gun. Not the one based on the God. What is it? The Italeri long ago did the tank and the self-propelled gun on the same chassis.
Right.
This one was first kitted in like 2013, maybe.
Yep.
It's a smaller vehicle. Italian subject by an Italian manufacturer. They need to go back and like Mach-E MC-202, their entire Italian armor lineup.
Yes.
To mention that kit, there's about three or four good reviews out there now.
Yeah.
And it looks like they've really raised the bar with that one, despite all the ejector pin location grousing that's kind of permeated some of their reviews. Pretty nice looking kit. That's going to throw some shade on the rest of their catalog, I think.
Well, and not only that, but their stuff is also expensive.
Well,
it just illogically expensive.
But I was kind of taking that for granted being Italeri. I just think if you accept that poison pill that Mach-E 202 is going to, they're raising the bar on themselves.
Sure.
And
well, hopefully that's a great sign.
I hope so. Well, what's your yawn?
Edward has released a number of other Big Ed sets, these giant photo etch sets that retail for $50 or $60 for a particular aircraft and have all the interior photo etch and all the exterior photo etch. And honest to God, and I'm being generous here, 50% of it is utterly useless. And I just don't understand why anyone would spend $50 or $60 for one of these sets, because you're not going to use half of it. And another third of it that you might use isn't any better than what's in the kit already. Unlike Ian, photo etch is not your friend. And I really do think... I am hopeful that, by the way, that 3D printing technology does away with a lot of photo etch, and I think there's that potential. So any new Big Ed set from Edward is a yawn for me.
Well, I got two more faves, so I'll hit the next one.
I got two more faves, too.
Nuts and Bolts Publications. You got a new book.
Okay. Gotcha.
It's on the six-wheeled heavy reconnaissance vehicles.
Always cool vehicles.
Always cool. Now, I'm selective on the titles from Nuts and Bolts, but I really do like the offerings from this publisher. I think their books are really worthwhile. So, this is probably what I'm going to get. So,
I love those six-wheeled armored cars. Those things are just cool.
So, Nuts and Bolts, I can't remember what volume it is, but the Zexrod heavy armored cars. So, looking forward to this one.
My next one's a fave, Werner's Wings. They do helicopter stuff, and they've released or are about to release a whole bunch of new decals for Vietnam era, not only AH-1Gs, but a number of different helicopter marking sets. And of course, Vietnam was to such a great extent a helicopter war, and Werner's Wings really devotes themselves to helicopters almost exclusively. And so I have zero doubt these things are going to be awesome.
Well, my last one's another fave.
Okay.
Landmo Models.
Never heard of
another new company has two kits in 35th scale of German Panzerstellungs, the tank turret bunkers.
Gotcha.
Right?
Yep.
The first set is for the Panzer I, Panzer II, and 38T turreted bunkers. Mm-hmm. And the second one is for the Panzer III, IV, and Panther turreted bunkers. Now, these are offered as 3-in-1 kits, but the description thus far is a little bit vague. I don't know if this is three bases and turrets, or if it's one base and three turrets, or if it's three bases and no turrets.
Right.
Which I suspect that's what it is.
I suspect you're right.
Based on the graphics that have been published out there, it looks like probably it's going to be the bases with no turrets, and the modeler is going to be left to cabbage the turrets from other kits and modify those for the bunker versions, which they took a lot of the armored glass optics out of. And
by the way, a good use of superseded kits, by the way.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm curious what this one's going to be. I'm curious what's actually in the box, going to be in the box for these. But Landmo, another one unfamiliar to me.
Me too.
You know, I think I've got it. There's a Panzertracks, the old Panzertracks book series has a book on these bunkers.
Cool.
So there you go.
Well, my final one is also a fave. It is Sword has announced that they are releasing two RF-8s. You know, I'm currently working on an F-8. One of the big holes in 72nd scale modeling is an RF-8, the reconnaissance version, which has a significantly different fuselage cross-section because of the cameras. These were utilized most importantly in the Cuban Missile Crisis. In fact, a lot of the photographs that you see from the Cuban Missile Crisis, everybody thinks you too. But most of these photographs were actually taken by RF-8s doing high-speed runs across Cuba. And it's been a huge hole. And Sword has now announced they're filling that hole. And Sword kits keep getting better and better. So I have high hope that these are going to be good. And I want to build one. So I'm happy to see this.
Well, man, that's all I've got. That's a lot for faves and yawns. That's probably our biggest one yet. But
I think so, too.
Let us know what you think of these kits and books, et cetera, folks. Let us know what you think.
I can tell you that Brandon Jacobs did not do bad with his St. Arnold Summer Pils. 4.9% alcohol by volume, so fairly light. An easy drink, a classic Pilsner. You're not going to be disappointed in this. It's got more body and more flavor than mass market American beers, but it's not heavy. It's not bitter. He did good. And I can recommend that wholeheartedly.
Well, you know, I can recommend the Russell's Reserve 10 year.
Color me shocked.
Color you shocked. So, you know, hands down, it's the most listener responded recommendation we've had, and it's been positive across the board. So,
yeah,
I'm not making this stuff up, folks.
No, hell no.
Russell's Reserve 10 year. If you need a good straight up Kentucky bourbon, the 10 year is pretty smooth. It's got a good flavor. Price is right. Can't go wrong.
I heartily recommend as well. Mike, we're really at the end of the episode now, so all that's left is the shout-outs. I've got two.
Why don't you go first?
Okay, well, my first one is our friends up at IPMS Duneland up in Indiana, right on the shore of the lake. They've got a show coming up October 14th. I don't know that we can manage to get up there. I really want to try and get up there. The show last year, by all reports, was really great. And I highly recommend it. I know Jeff Groves, Inch High Guy, is going to be going up to the show this year. And I just wanted to give him a shout out and let him know that even if we don't get there, we're going to be thinking about
it. Trying to get those guys on for the 12-Minute Modelsphere. So.
Yes, that's part of the plan.
Let's not forget that.
No.
Well, we heard from him in listener mail. Benjamin Montgomery Schinkel from Australia has joined the ranks of the folks supporting Plastic Model Mojo through their monetary donations. Ben comes to us through PayPal. If you'd like to be like Ben and contribute to Plastic Model Mojo, you can do that one of two ways. One, if you'd like to make a recurring contribution, you can do so through Patreon by going to www.patreon.com/plasticmodelmojo. There you can make a recurring contribution from any amount from a dollar on up, and Patreon will handle the billing for that. If you'd like to do like Ben and do a one-time contribution through PayPal, you can do so by going to www.plasticmodelmojo.com. In the upper right-hand corner of the homepage, you'll see a heart icon that will take you directly to our PayPal link. There you can make a one-time contribution of your choice or a recurring contribution and manage it yourself there. Folks, we appreciate this. It helps us bring Plastic Model Mojo to you. So far, we've done that through 99 episodes. There's no end in sight. We hope to keep going. So we really appreciate the help along the way. It helps us bring you this show, which is for you.
Well, my next shout out is, of course, I have to wrap up with the Military Modelers Club of Louisville putting on the Region 4 Regional on September 22nd and 23rd, 2023. If you are within the sound of my voice and within distance of getting to Louisville, we know that a lot of our listeners are coming. They've already reached out to us. There's going to be a great time. Mike and I are going to be there, and come. It's going to be a fantastic show. We put on a great party, guys.
All right, Dave, we're at the end of this one.
And it's been a good one, man.
It has. As they always say.
So many kits.
So little time, Dave.
I'll see you Friday or Saturday.
I'll see you Saturday at the show.